You're on.
Good morning, councillors. This morning work session is to provide update to the councillors on our rural industrial land bank project, where we are to date. And before we start the presentation, Gordy is our internal project manager on this, and we have our consultant team with us. So we'll just go ahead and introduce ourselves so you know who is sitting at the table, and then I'll turn it over to Gordy. So, Tim?
Tim Schauer, the Case for Zito.
And Lisa Greeter with Burke Consulting.
We also have the applicant representative here, Steve Horenstein, who is representing Mr. Lagler. So he's in the audience, and we're all here to answer questions as we progress. You can stop us in the middle of the update and ask questions. And we have Tim and Lisa here, and myself and Gordy, and also our legal counsel to help answer questions that you may have. We are not asking you today to make any decision. This is more of an update as to where we are and where we're heading with the project.
Tim Schauer, I didn't quite catch the name.
Lisa?
Oh, excuse me.
There you go.
I didn't quite catch the name.
Lisa Greeter.
Lisa Greeter. Thank you.
Lisa's the project manager with Burke and out of Seattle, that's heading the project team that's has done all the work for us.
Thank you.
Okay, Cody.
Other questions before we begin?
What right. CW is the this under?
It's the section we're proceeding under is it's the Growth Management Act 3670A, and the section is that we're 3670 capital A dot, and then the section number is 367.
Thank you.
So good morning, councilors. I'm Gordy Euler, the project manager for the Rural Industrial Land Bank. We're continuing to work away at meeting the statutory requirements. We're going to review those briefly. We hired Burke to assist us. This is a most interesting project because there are very few jurisdictions in the state of Washington that have availed themselves of this part of the statute, and as such, we don't have a whole lot of guidance. There's no cookbook approach, and so please feel free to ask questions. The team has been fabulous. We've sat down and looked at the statutory requirements, which we'll review, and basically agreed on what's our best path forward, and we're going to share that with you this morning. So, got a PowerPoint presentation.
You mentioned that there are a couple other counties that use this provision in the code, the statute. The question is, were they both successful?
So Lewis County is the nearest location. They used a statute that's very similar. It's .365, and they did have their approval.
And we're using the 367. Has anyone used the 367 successfully?
I'm not aware of 367 was created after 365.
Right.
And so for the pioneers.
Lewis County actually used section 368, which was written after the fact, specifically for Lewis County, because they were having such a hard time getting one of these established that 368 had to do with establishing a site that was on an old abandoned mine site. I know that didn't Spokane County flirt with this at one point?
So Whatcom County has created under 365 the Cherry Point Industrial Area, and then Walla Walla County has created the Italia Industrial Urban Area. Under 365, I believe.
Okay.
And the 368 came after this, and it doesn't apply to us?
365, Councilor, the section of the statute deals with establishing a land bank if you have a developer, if you know somebody that wants a site. In this case, it was I don't remember the name of the company, it was a glass bottle manufacturing company that wanted to locate in Lewis County. 367 allows you to establish up to two sites if you don't have a developer. We're doing this on spec. It's a land bank, kind of a if we build it, they will come sort of a thing. 368 was a section that was added more recently to the Growth Management Act that had similar provisions, but included the requirement that you were redeveloping an old abandoned mine site, and that's what Lewis County eventually developed under.
So this allows us, the intent, it sounds like, for 367 is to allow those counties that are proactive, that want to make jobs a priority, economic development a priority, a means to do so to prepare for the future.
That's correct, and there's quite a process that we need to go through to get there. It's not just you decide you want to do this. There's a number of steps that we have to do, and again, part of the presentation is to walk you through those. So that when we get to the decision process, which we hope to be later this year, you'll have a good understanding of how we got to where we are. So this is our agenda for today. We'll talk a little bit about the requirements. We'll talk about the application site. We have two sites. We'll show you a map here in a moment. What makes a good industrial site? This is where we started the conversation with Burke, and this was their best way. Said, well, what makes it, you know, why would you want to put an industrial location here? Potential Clark County sites, we'll talk a little bit about those. We'll look at the agricultural evaluation, the application site. All 600 acres is currently designated for ag, and that's presented, of course, some challenges. We'll look at the application site conditions, and we'll have a preliminary sort of master plan concept, and we'll close this morning then with next steps. So, next slide, Matt. Oh, there we go. So again, here we go. Rural Industrial Land Bank, the provision we're using is here on the screen, 3678-367. As we all know, RCW 3670A is the Growth Management Act. The requirements that we have to go through are listed here. We have to do an inventory of sites. We have to consult with cities, affected cities. In this case, we've notified both Vancouver and Battleground, since as you'll see from the site map, this area is between the two. We have to do a master planning process, and Lisa and Tim can talk a little bit more about that if you have specific questions. We have to have a set of development regulations for the site, and those are something that's being worked on. We have to have a programmatic level of environmental review, and we're trying to figure out what that means. We can read the words. This is where we came up with the notion of, well, what other alternative sites to the application site might there be in the county? And then there has to be a local adoption process. This is a Type 4 legislative process. At some point, we'll go through the Planning Commission and the boards, both work session and hearing, and it'll be up to you to decide whether to proceed with the comprehensive plan designation change and the zone change or not. Councilor?
So that second last bullet, rather than an EIS, what is the difference between that and a programmatic level?
Do you want to take that one?
Sure. The programmatic level of environmental review is basically a non-project level, so it's for plans or programs. And then the county would determine what the appropriate environmental document is. Because these sites were studied pretty well in the 2007 EIS, we can build off of that work. And the statute requires that we do an inventory of developable land and that we do an analysis of the availability of alternative sites. So the work we're about to present, and that is still ongoing, would be attached to the environmental determination that the county makes.
Yeah, where is it that it specifies that alternative sites to be considered?
It's RCW 3670A 367 2B.
Good question, Councillor. We want to make this a standalone project and complete it before you take final action on the growth plan. Yes.
Before you ask a question, we've already referred to the RCW here. Sometimes Washington Administrative Code is a bit more definitive to understand it, and if that doesn't work, you can check with the agency involved. Have we done any of that after this weekend?
I don't believe the WAC rules are that much more specific than the statute
so
in this case.
Pages, I know.
I believe for comprehensive plans in general, the WAC rules have become more detailed over time, but I don't believe for this portion of growth management that it's much more specific.
Next slide. So the county received an application in February of last year. There are two areas. They're all zoned to Ag 20. Next slide. It's a little hard to see at this scale, but running right up the middle of the slide, north to south, is SR 503. The area in the blue and white, outlined by the blue and white dotted line, are the two sites. Just running east and west along the bottom there, near the bottom there is northeast 119th, so it gives you kind of an orientation. So 373 acres, I think, on the eastern piece, that's Lager property, 220-some acres on the western piece, designated as, in the application, as the Athlon property.
So and as you can see on the western property, our railroad, the county railroad, runs through the piece on the west side.
Next slide. So a little bit about what's been done. One of the things we do is an inventory of sites, and so we started with the CREDC Land for Jobs inventory. That was done, I think, in 2011. Does that sound about right? 2011. Basically, what you have to do, your first requirement is you have to look inside urban areas, cities, and then urban growth areas first to find land large enough for an industrial site. And only if you can't find the land there in large enough, sufficient quantities, are you allowed to proceed to look in rural areas. So we started with this inventory. It's already been completed, so we didn't have to do our own. We already had this. So in February 2014, then, we got the application. We brought Burke on in August. McKay Esposito then is part of the team, Tim's group. Kittleson & Associates is leading the transportation work, and Anchor
QEA
is doing some of the environmental review. So that's the planning team that Lisa has assembled. This is our second work session with the board. We had one back in the Planning Commission. We had these back in November and December. We've been to NAC, the Neighborhood Advisory Council of Clark County. If you recall, in November we updated the Clark County's master planning code so that to allow us to do a master plan for an industrial land bank site. So that's one piece of this that you've already acted on, and that was done in December. So we've had two open houses. They're the dates. We had a Planning Commission work session with this same information on May 7th, and I made a presentation to the county's Economic Development Action Team at Jeff's invitation a couple of weeks ago. So,
Gordy?
Sir?
The Planning Commission, did they end up with a position on this?
Not yet.
No.
Because this is changing the comprehensive plan, they will we'll have a work session, and they will make a recommendation to you as to just like they would for any review or land use regulation process.
Yeah, it was May 7th, which is a month ago.
Correct.
Yes.
What happened on May 7th?
We gave them this same presentation just to brief them on the progress that we're making on this project.
So that was input to them, and they're going to be chewing on that, and they're going to have a meeting where they're going to then have a recommendation.
At some point they will hold a hearing.
And that's not scheduled yet?
No.
No.
Okay. But that won't be until you get some direction from the councilors.
Yes. Councilor, at some point, whether it's when we go to the Planning Commission in a hearing, we will probably give you an advance that we are now completed the project and we are in the local adoption process. At that time, we will advance it to the Planning Commission. We are doing the same thing, just like going to NAC, having open houses, presenting this application and this project to interested parties. It's part of our continuous public participation process, if you will. So because the Planning Commission will be taking a hearing and taking testimony, we want to continue to update them as where we are. If they have questions, issues, we want to hear that up front so that we can respond to that when we come to a hearing. That was the purpose of continuously updating them as to where we are.
I didn't catch what in that last bullet point. What is EDAT?
EDAT is the county's Economic Development Action Team. And it's a group of representatives from county departments. I think it's the county department heads. And I was asked to come and speak.
Utilities, CPU. And
yeah, CPU and I think
wastewater.
That was
wastewater.
A presentation to them.
Correct.
So basically, they were exposed to the same.
Yes, they're gonna, they got the same presentation. I also have upcoming presentations to the Railroad Advisory Board scheduled and to CREDC. So, and it'll be the same PowerPoint. Get a lot of mileage out of it. Okay, next slide. So in terms of our, you know, how we were going to approach this, again, there's no handbook, there's no cookbook as to the best way to do this. So we said if we're going to do an industrial land bank, we start with the question, what makes a good industrial site? And even though we've got an application now, the county has accepted, we're trying to think of our best approach to be successful in getting an industrial land bank established. Yes?
Can you put some clarity on the definition of industrial? What is in that scope? Heavy industry, light industry?
By our county code, if we are successful, the zoning will be light industrial.
Light.
That's per counties, the county's comprehensive plan and county code.
So not asphalt plants.
Correct.
And friendly to the neighbors.
Correct. And if you go on the website, we have a link that will take you right to the use table for, I believe it's 4230.
Don't we have a railroad industrial land bank as well?
Yeah, let's not confuse that issue with that. Yeah.
So basically, business sites.
Correct. Gene, question? Okay. All right. So we started with the idea, what makes a good industrial site? And again, think of what Lisa just said a moment ago when we're thinking of looking at sites that we have to consider for the environmental review. We thought, well, why just limit it to the application site? Is this a good site? What makes a good site? So we started with a basic question. That led us to then an inventory of sites, and I'll show you those, what the process was. There was an inventory done. We identified some possible areas for consideration. We're in the process of analyzing those, and those will be part of the programmatic level of environmental review. And the thing that we need to do, of course, for this, the docket site, the application site, is we have to redesignate it. We have to say it's no longer ag. We have to de-designate it from ag and then rezone it to light industrial. And again, that's a requirement of the comprehensive plan.
Oh, okay, yeah, good. Do you have one more question for you?
Sure.
Our interest is, that's good.
No, it's great.
The conversation that we had before this meeting, I was not aware of the .2b, which sounds like it specifies a responsibility to consider alternative sites. Does that responsibility lie in looking inside the urban boundary first, and if that's not satisfied, then there's no constraints. We just simply look outside the urban boundary.
I can read you the language from the statute. We look at both. It's to be an analysis of the availability of alternative sites within urban growth areas and the long-term annexation feasibility of sites outside of urban growth areas.
Okay.
So both.
So there's no particular constraints or criteria. It just says look first inside the urban growth boundary and look about the future appropriateness of bringing such a developed site inside the urban growth boundary. So the assumption there that I would draw is that it ought to be relatively close to an urban growth boundary. It wouldn't be out there located 20 miles out from the urban growth boundary.
I believe that's correct. There's another part of the statute, I think, that assumes that it's adjacent to urban areas, and I'll try to find that language.
Yeah, again, the overarching premise of the Growth Management Act is put your development where you've got the services and the infrastructure. So we're starting with the idea that should be the first priority. If you can't, if the amount of land you need isn't there, then 367 gives you the ability to look elsewhere. And now we're going through those, saying that we need to have the ability to look elsewhere. How do you do that? And that's what we're relays. You know, how do we do that? Yes, it would be preferable to have 100 acres in an urban growth area someplace. It's not there. So in essence, a rural industrial land bank creates its own urban growth area in the rural area. But there's a series of statutory requirements that you need to check off and to have addressed. And you'll see all this again, and it'll be a fairly good-sized package that comes to you. But we'll show you the inventory, we'll show you the master plan, we'll show you the regulations, we'll show you the environmental review. All that will be part of the process that comes to you via the Planning Commission for legislative action.
So. Gordy, if I could add, I found the language in section subsection 2A. It says, in selecting locations for the industrial land bank area, priority must be given to locations that are adjacent to or in close proximity to an urban growth area.
Okay, next slide. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these things. These are the things that were considered in terms of are to be considered in terms of what makes a good industrial site. Obviously, utilities, what are the constraints of the parcels, transportation access. I don't know if anybody would want to locate a site 20 miles out if they could find a site within a mile of the freeway. Land use and other planning considerations, zoning compatibility, what's going on around the area. Next slide. And these are the criteria that were used as the first filter in terms of potential Clark County sites. And this would include, again, the application site. Greater than 100 acres, that's in the comp plan. Privately owned, could be industrial or commercial. Within a half mile of major roads, obviously people that are going to locate want to be able to get raw materials in and finished materials out. Of course, as was pointed out, we have the railroad that happens to run through the western side. Reasonably flat. One of the things that we looked at that was decided on was, well, is there an area inside an urban growth area? And as you'll see here in a moment, Section 30 in Vancouver was looked at as a site that for comparison, say.
And Gordy, each of these bullet points are our own specifications defined by the county, not by the RCW or by the right?
I think they were defined by the team as what would make, I mean, and we started with a set of sort of standard planning assumptions as to where you'd want to locate if you were in an industry. What do you need to be successful? So those criteria then were translated into, Tim, you want
to? Which is good. In other words, we have the freedom to arrive at those reasonable expectations as to what it would take for this site to be successful. And these specifics are not specified by the law.
They're not prescribed. Right. They're developed by the team for you.
Yes.
Great. And this is a process that has begun, but with an application by these two companies.
Correct.
That's correct.
And that's privately owned. Does the RCW say anything about this? Who leads? Whether the property owners are the ones that make the application? Or if they had not made application, this is something that we could have as a county governing body.
Yes, our code was very specific that it is the applicant that makes the application. When the applicant makes the application, the county then initiates processing that application. So in a sense, we take ownership of that and begin to see how that application meets the intent of the state statute.
Okay. So in this case, in order for us to follow that code that's already adopted, when an applicant makes an application like this, property owner makes an application, then our responsibility is to accommodate that and see what we can do to walk it through the process.
In essence, we are then obligated to process that application, and in doing so, it falls on us and to some extent the applicant to meet the intent of the state statute. So we take that initiative, but walking through the state statute to make sure that the application we are reviewing meets that criteria. So yes, we take the initiative, or we become the applicant in this case.
So I'll equate that to, or similar to, if we have a building permit process. When somebody submits a building permit, we have responsibility to process that
process.
This is that process.
Exactly.
Okay. And this in essence, at its simplest, is nothing more than a large comprehensive plan change and zone change. It just happens to be 600 acres. It happens to be for industrial land, and we're using a part of the statute that says, oh, by the way, here's some additional things you need to do. But it's no different than somebody comes in and says, I want to go 10 acres, I want to go from industrial to commercial. It's the same process in the terms of the outcome. It's you'll need to make the final decision. So let's go to the next slide. Matt?
We refer to the 0.068 previously, which was a request of a landowner, and that doesn't necessarily what we have here. This is something we identified the location and then asked the landowner, is that what we did here? Or was there a request by the landowner first?
Yeah, the landowner said, I want to have these two sites designated as an industrial land. And so the county's obligation then is to process that. And we're going to give you the good and the bad. We'll tell you what the sites are like. We have to go through the de-designation process. We have to meet all these requirements. And
so,
go ahead.
So I think, if I understand the question correctly, you're comparing the .368, which requires a developer, to the .367, which does not have a developer doing the .367.
368, it doesn't apply in this case because it was written specifically for a specific situation if you're trying to establish an industrial land bank on an area that's an abandoned mine. That's how Lewis County got the glass plant. 365 says you've got a developer, which we would like to have because then we can design the site with what their needs are in mind. We don't. 367 says you do it on spec. And so that's why they say you need a master plan concept. And again, Tam and Lisa and the crew have been putting this together. We'll show you that. So we're just basically methodically, as best we can, as strategically as we can, trying to increase our chances of success and working through the requirements. Because I know Steve doesn't like me to say this, but we're making this up as we go. We've got the best minds on this. All right, I said it. There we go. Strike that last remark. But we don't have a lot of guidance. We read the statute. We've got the best team that we can that are working through these. And it's I must say at this point it's going rather well.
Sure. And rather than making it up as we go, there's probably a more positive way to do it.
Yes.
So I love invention. I love design. I love people that have the freedom to come up with concepts that give us the freedom to fit something that makes sense for the future. And that's what we have the ability to do here, which is the master plan allows that freedom to tailor a concept that fits.
Right. I might add also that on our team is Andy Lane with Karen Cross and Hempelman, and he helped Lewis County with that .368 process. So we do. While there's limited experience in the state, I think we've tried to bring in the experience that was available.
Thank you. Here are the potential sites. Again, a little hard to see. This map actually needs to be updated because the mining layer is wrong, but that's a side comment. The sites that are in pink, you can see the docket site is site 1. Site 2 is up near north of Ridgefield. Site 3, I think that's actually the 219th interchange area. Site 4 is down here.
Anderson Dairy.
And then site 5, which is below that, was the section 30 site. Again, these are the sites that met the potential criteria: the flat, the within a half mile, the more than 100 acres.
Right.
So
and
this was the sort of the first cut.
The presence of critical areas or not, and how extensive.
Yeah. And by the way, this is on the grid. If you review, I didn't make copies for everybody. So, councilor.
So the obvious things on that map, you see these yellow.
Correct.
To do with this.
The
not adjacent to or in close proximity to the UGA.
The yellow areas on the map from the legend are areas where there's surface mining overlay, and we've since changed that. I'm just saying to Lisa, we need to update this map. Those are essentially industrial sites,
cool.
That some of which are larger than 100 acres, but the ones that we focused on in terms of winnowing the process down. What are potential alternative sites that meet the good industrial site criteria are the areas that are kind of in pinkish fuchsia. Okay? All right? So here's the application site. One of the other things that we're doing is that each one of these sites, 1, 2, 3, and 4, are zoned for ag. All of them were covered in the EIS that was written on the 2007 comprehensive plan update. But one of the things that I think the law requires is if you were to take these out of agriculture and production, they're sort of embedded in areas that have agriculture around them. So the areas in black here, this is the docket site. The area in red is agricultural land that's adjacent. So one of the things that I think is part of the analysis is how would an industrial site affect its neighbors? And in this case, the neighbors are, there's lots of agricultural land that will remain as the neighbors to this site. So that's what this shows. Actually, the next couple of slides are the same way. So when I go to 2? The black is with site 2 that's up north of Ridgefield. The red is ag that's adjacent to it. Next slide. Here's the 219th interchange. The black is the site, and the red is ag that's adjacent to it.
As you walk through these, can you identify where they're at? You said that the on page 12 is the first alternative.
This is the docket site. Yeah, this is the docket site, the Lager property.
Yeah, well, on page 12.
Okay, next slide.
What's that interchange?
This is north of Ridgefield. I think that's the La Center interchange there.
319.
This is the 219th interchange.
On page 13?
Yes.
Slide three.
Page 14.
I don't know what the nearest
is. That's between Camas and Vancouver.
Just south of Fourth Plain.
Right. So is this Anderson Dairy?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, right. So this is on the east side of Northeast 162nd, south of SR 500.
That vertical street there is 162nd?
Yes, sir. And immediately to the west of that are all inside the city limits of Vancouver. And then site 5 is the section 30. This is an area that was jointly studied by the county and the city, and following that, as you are aware, the city did annex this area, so it's now inside the city limits of Vancouver. The middle of the property is extension of Mill Plain.
Why would we have considered section 30? Because it's developing into a really urban, really intense kind of retail.
Yes, we did consider it because we were required to first look inside the UGA to see whether there are areas that has 100 acres or more. This is just one example of an area that has, but then we ruled it out because it is developing as you cited.
The upper image there is from the Land for Jobs study from the EDC, and it was one of the few areas that was found to have that acreage area, and they had some similar criteria that they were evaluating the large sites as what we are proposing for what makes a good industrial site.
And it was eliminated because of incompatibility with the other development that's going on in Section 30, and it's really being in a major transportation corridor. There might be some arterials in there, but...
So the site is included for now in terms of our evaluation, but the factors that Oliver mentioned may end up negating it, but we're just doing our review of the criteria, and it was evaluated in a similar way in the EDC study. It is near a freight route. There's factors that we account for. This sub-area plan image is from the county sub-area plan process, and the city subsequently did its own.
Okay.
I've been reading ahead, and before we get into the next, we've got to change topics. When we see it again, I'd like to focus a little bit more on the consideration of the alternatives, because if we move ahead, we're assuming that we've eliminated those. And so I'd like to ask a few questions regarding both site 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
Anyway, right.
We're not eliminating alternatives. What we're showing is that these are sites that will be part of the programmatic level of environmental review.
Oh, okay. So,
these aren't going away. Yeah.
2, 4
right.
Consideration.
Right.
But remember, we have an application from a developer.
Yes.
For
yes,
a site. What we're doing in terms of enhancing showing our work, which is going to be very important, is are there other places that we should that are potentially as good or for industrial sites in the county? That'll be useful information for us. The decision that is going to be before you is whether or not to grant Legler his request at the end of the day. So these sites aren't going away. We're using them for study purposes and to show our work.
Great. That's part of what happens here in a work session, is that clarification helps to clear up any misunderstanding. I thought that this was eliminating those sites. In reality, it's including those sites. So for references and for alternatives.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And with the understanding is we don't have applications for those sites. They're merely for comparison's sake, and we think it's important to show our work, and we think that will help us. Our chances of being successful in getting one of these established is looking at is saying, well, what else did you look at? Well, we've got that information.
Thank you.
Let me ask a question about that. So, if our intent is to if this moves forward, if we have a selected for an industrial, a rural industrial, I think. Without applications for those other parcels, can we consider more than one? I don't see how we could consider more than one, because the process of getting an application in, I don't know how complicated that is. It makes me wonder if it could be done in time to wrap this into completion and getting this folded into our comp plan update. Is there a question for it?
Well, there's one. The provision 367 allows counties to establish two sites and only two sites. You're limited to that forever. So
yes.
We have two sites.
Yes.
We have two sites potential. One is on the Ackerland property. One is the Lagler property. And if we consider those to be two sites and they're established, we're done with using the provisions of 367. There will never be another rural industrial land bank unless we get the statute amended.
And if I would add, this provision in the statute sunsets December of 2016, and with the effort of EDC and Steve here and our lobbyists, we were successful in asking the legislature to amend this section of the statute to extend, give it more life. They agreed to do that, but the sunset in 2016. So God is correct that we are limited, or the counties are limited to two sites. When this application came in, it came in as two sites. So if we are successful, that will be it, unless this legislature changes or amend the current statute. So, but yes, if we are successful, this will be it for Clark County.
But the limitation to two sites puts this in a much more important perspective. It's not like punch in and get two necessarily right now, assign two, because that will limit our opportunities in the future.
So I have a question. You said we have a shot for two sites for eternity. The question is, if this is not successful, have we used up our opportunity? Or is there, is the that provision only for a successful outcome?
If we are not successful, assuming we complete this year and we are not successful, we still have the opportunity to get one established before the sunset in December of 2016.
If we're not successful, then we haven't established a site. So
right.
we are allowed to establish sites.
Okay, so let's say that this is not successful, then potentially in the future, one of these other alternatives may come forward, make an application, and potentially, we're not closing that. If this isn't successful, that window of opportunity continues for
until the end of 2016.
Yeah.
Until the end of next year.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is hypothetical because our goal is to be successful. However, on that hypothetical, if we are not, we are still obligated to get site established before December of 2016. How successful can we be and meet that deadline? I can't speculate.
So this is a window of opportunity that will close.
Yes.
This not 367 goes away after December 2016?
Correct.
Yes.
One of the reasons it took us, you saw the application was in February and we didn't get a contract until August. We weren't sure that we were going to be successful in getting it extended from the end of 2014 to the end of 2016. There was no point in starting a process if we weren't going to be able to complete it. And so through Steve's efforts and the lobbyists, we were able to extend the time frame 2 years, and then we said we can do it. Burke came back and said we can do this in 2 years.
So this can be approved outside of a growth management update.
Out of cycle and
out of cycle.
Correct.
Yes.
Can it be done on an annual update?
It could be done as part. Yes, it could be done on the annual. It could also be done as part of your periodic, now 8-year cycle, countywide. There's so many ways you can do it.
Okay.
Yeah. The fact that the two processes are going on simultaneously is coincidence.
Just that we have options. That's
yes.
Good enough.
But again, remember that our window is closing because of the sunset provision.
Yes.
So even though the RCW requires us to consider alternative sites, it's a foregone conclusion, it's foreseeable at this point, that sites 2 through 5 are essentially, they will be scratched off the list because there's no application for them. So there's no way they could possibly be successful going forward as alternative sites.
If your question is about the alternatives analysis, what we are looking for in the analysis of those alternatives is an honest, accurate evaluation of those sites according to the criteria that are listed there. If one of them comes up as obviously, if this were done on a point scale and one of them was a 10 and the applicant site was a 2, I think we would have difficulty being successful at this. So this needs to be a real alternatives analysis. It's not a fake.
Then let me summarize what I think I'm drawing from this. That even though those alternative sites have not made application, the score of all of these, including the one that has made application, is fairly evaluated for appropriateness for industrial site in the future.
Certainly the work that's been done on the alternative sites isn't lost, but we are responding to the application that's in front of us. The approach that we've chosen as well as the requirement for the programmatic level of environmental review, which requires you to look at alternative sites, is what's driving this. So could we go to site two if we can't get site one? No. There's no application by a property owner to change the zoning on site two. We're just saying, for the sake of showing our work, which we think is a good strategy going forward, that yes, we did consider some other places, but we're responding to the application that we have in front of us.
But that's only true, notwithstanding new information about other sites. So if we select one site to move forward, and we get new information or new developments about another site, we would still have the option of reprioritizing the remaining sites based on if we get new information, if there are new developments.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean by reprioritizing. The question, because we have an application for this site, the question is whether this site meets the criteria. And as part of answering that question, what the county needs to do is determine whether there are alternatives that are just so much better suited that it would be inappropriate to say, yes, this meets the criteria. So that's, I think, what the alternatives analysis is about. It would not come up with an answer of, oh, we choose site two because nobody's asked us about site two.
And I understand that for whatever develops as a priority site or as a site that most closely meets the criteria that we've established. I'm talking about consideration for a second site in the future. And so keeping that door open. And
I guess I would offer, if I understand correctly, this is not my area of expertise, but listening to both sides of the conversation, I would offer, I believe, council could hypothetically deny these sites as the choice for a rural industrial land bank if other sites you deem are superior to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean the superior site would likely meet the sunset if no one applies.
Yeah.
So that is a duality here.
Right.
In order to select Lagros for your site, you have to look at the others and decide, do these others score higher? If they score higher, you'd have a hard time justifying choosing the Lagler site as a superior site if they don't score well. But that doesn't mean, correct?
It doesn't mean that another site is chosen.
You can't choose the other site because there is no applicant.
Yes,
is that correct?
That's correct. I believe that's the case.
Yes. Yes.
And that was very well put. That helps me to understand much more.
Engineers don't normally communicate well, but I try.
I love the logic. Give me an A.
Yes.
We're one for the engineers.
No, I'm sitting next to him.
Way to represent him.
Yes.
So I do have a question. When it comes to this whole process, we get somewhere there's a decision point, and does this finally go to the growth management board, and they're going to say yes or no? Who makes the final call?
Depends on whether someone appeals your decision.
This is our discretion.
That's correct. You're making a decision on whether to change the comprehensive plan designation and the zoning on these 600 acres.
Okay. And the fact that we've got two parcels, the Ackerland and the Lagler parcels, they make up A and B of this application. The criteria, we could potentially say yes to the application as is, or we could say if A is Lagler and B is Ackerland, we could say A but not B. We could modify it, we could somehow find some analogish variation of it in order to make a better fit for the application. So it's not a yes or no, it is ultimately yes or no, but how it gets fine-tuned is part of part of this process.
Correct.
We understand. So
yes.
This master plan and this concept that provides one instance of a envisioned master plan helps us to understand, along with these alternatives, the appropriateness of this application.
That's correct. And without repeating what others have said, yes. And what we are trying to do is document the analysis, the review we have done, and bring that in front of you as well as the Planning Commission. You will review that work as well as the public that weighs in and said, yes, based on what have been done, you believe or you concluded or you find that this site meets that criteria and we have done our homework or not. And that's it. As Chris indicated, if we are challenged, that's when the same folks will look at our work and maybe reach a different conclusion. But that's how this will work.
Yes, sir.
So this board has already made the decision that this is going to be our project. So bring us an update as to their plan and the steps that they fulfilled that we expect. That the state is required. We don't go back, we don't get another bite at the apple. We're going to run out of time.
Yeah.
It takes this much time to do these studies and come forward. We don't say, oh, we're going to do one and not the other. Mm-hmm. It's a package that we put forward for these people to bring back to give us an update where we are.
Yes.
If I can summarize my understanding of this process, I agree to. But let me add my own understanding of it. We've agreed to process the application as submitted, and we've agreed to encourage the professional work that's going to be invested in order to come up with a workable concept for this so that we can understand it. Yet we also understand that whatever comes out at the end is going to be a process of, we're charged with the responsibility to understand and to ensure that it fits and that it's good for our community and to balance whatever the concerns are out there by the citizens. So we are aware that there are a number of citizens that want to preserve farmland and don't develop it under any circumstances, and there's everything in between. And so the outcome is not just simply following a process for the sake of following a process. This is to help us as decision makers to make informed decisions and not just simply trust that staff and trust that the consultants know what they're doing. We do already do that, but we also need to make sure that we trust the basis of the decisions, or the basis of the information you provide us, so that we have situation awareness, we have the understanding of what the trade-offs are, so that when we finally make a approval process on this, it will be based on understanding.
Well said.
It will be based on the facts, yes.
Yes, and this is, again, we want to make sure you have the information you need, and it's been, like I said, it's been interesting because we're gathering the information as we see best fit to meet the requirements of the statute. For you, it's a decision process.
Sure, and I'm not, at this point, suggesting that we modify it at all. I just need to know up front what the options are and what our responsibilities are involved in this process.
Sure. And that's the update that we are providing you as to where we are, what we are doing to process the application that the councilors have advised us to proceed. Got it?
All right, so next slide. So the next challenge we have is Lyme zone for agriculture, and we need to do a designation analysis on the property. And do you want to speak to that, what we've done?
Sure. We have to, for any site that would potentially be redesignated from ag to, so light industrial under this case, we have to look at the WAC criteria and look at whether they meet the criteria to be designated agriculture of long-term commercial significance. To de-designate, you need to show that they wouldn't meet the balance of the criteria. So the criteria are summarized up on the screen. They're in the WAC, Washington Administrative Code 365-190-050. Gordy alluded to this earlier. Part of the criteria is to take an area-wide look and not just only at the site, and that's why we're looking at both the site and the area in which it sits. So we've done an initial analysis of the four non-urban sites, because they all have some portion of all or a portion zoned for agriculture. So for each site 1 through 4, we've gone through this analysis. We provided maps and information that show, and we can run through those next few slides. So this is site 1. One of the criteria is looking at parcel sizes. So we've looked at the parcel sizes.
These are all site 1 is coming up.
Right. Parcel sizes, the color dots represent different parcel sizes. The brighter ones are the smaller lots, and the darker colored ones are the larger lots. We can go to the next slide. We also look at the current use of the sites. In this case, with the docket area, this hatch mark shows all the parcels that are in the current use taxation for agriculture. So basically, just about everything in that ag zoned area is enrolled in that current use program. We also have to look at the proximity of services, and so being just north of the Vancouver urban growth area, there's in the blue, I believe, are the water lines, and the yellow are the sewer lines, and then we have designated freight routes on SR 503. So those are some of the criteria we looked at for all the sites, and part of the criteria for AGD designation is related to proximity of services and also to the level of traffic in relation, urban traffic versus traffic that's more consistent with a rural character. We look at critical areas. This is as mapped in the county's system. And then we have the next slide shows the difference between the mapped information, which looks at hydric soils, and the National Wetland Inventory on the left. And on the right is the results of a field reconnaissance by Anchor QEA, our biologists. And it's showing that there's less, so the orange are the wetlands as mapped. The hatched areas, I believe, are the drain tiles. And so the actual presence of wetlands, given the altered character of the site, is much smaller than the mapped. So that formed the basis for some of the later analysis that you'll see that Tim will talk about. And then if we go on from there, this is soil capability classifications, and that's part of the agriculture criteria. So the class 1 and 2 and 3 are more in the green shades, and the other classes are in the yellow and orange shades. So we have a draft of that report that was put out before the April workshop, as well as the inventory document to give folks a chance to take a look at that information. And it will be folded into the programmatic analysis.
So those are the kinds of things that are being considered in the environmental review. So it's a little hard to see on the map, but it's we just wanted you to know what things are being studied in terms of the, again, we're showing our work here. What's happening on the sites? What's going on there? What's going on around them? Are they suitable for development? How much is not going to be developable, the net acres versus gross acres?
Over to Tim.
Yeah, do you want to go? You want to go from here on them?
Sure. Master plan guiding principles. The context I would add here is that industrial master planning is not complicated, but very important to consider efficient use of parcels. So we've developed some criteria here, just some principles that guide some of that. We're looking at the compatibility surrounding land uses. We look at how those properties can create long-term value. And the way I would express long-term value is many of us in this industry have seen sites that have short-term value. They create a moment in time where they have a tenant that they use, and then they don't seem to turn over for time. So we're looking for long-term value. Promote the sustainable development by minimizing environmental impacts and reducing waste. Anticipate a changing market and industrial needs, and maintain a flexibility for a variety of light industrial uses. Light industrial uses tend to turn over time. They're not single, ideally they're not a single tenant use. And we've all seen the merging of light industrial and office uses over the last couple of decades. Land uses have changed. We anticipate that change won't stop. So looking for parcels that are flexible to adapt to a changing marketplace. I'll support the creation of a rural industrial land bank as set forth in GMA. Okay, so, yes.
So in considering the access to infrastructure, does 503 have sewer, adequate sewer and water already for that state route?
So I guess the challenging phrase, a word in that question is adequate. Feasible is what I would articulate. There are provisions and plans in place that could provide all the urban services. Depending on whether you're talking about sewer, telecom, water, stormwater, they all have varying degrees of readiness currently, but there is plans in place to demonstrate how they would be provided. The feasibility of serving them is challenging without an individual tenant. If you're going to put a million square foot manufacturing facility, lots of things become more feasible than if we're going to put up a 20,000 square foot office building. So we've looked at all those serviceabilities. We found no fatal flaws in the serviceability of this area.
Is there any sewer along SR landscape route, or is it just simply a question of whether or not that sewer is large enough?
I think it's a question of whether it's large enough. I know that the the Winco, north of 119th, is served by sewer.
Is that sewer from Battleground?
No, I believe.
Available for City of Vancouver.
I don't have the information, but I believe it's either that Winco is served by the city or by wastewater treatment.
I'll answer for you.
Go ahead.
This area would be served by the Clark Regional Wastewater District.
Yes.
So it's not in the Vancouver boundary, it's within the Clark Regional Wastewater Service District.
As you know, Vancouver provides infrastructure outside, so they do have outside their city limits and outside, I think, even their UGA, they do have some sewer development.
Okay.
But this is outside of that as well.
They submitted a sewer plan from Clark Region.
Their sewer service area is outside. Because Vancouver has the greatest capacity.
But all the areas in the county are aligned with a certain service provider. And
right.
This area is currently aligned with the Clark Regional Wastewater District boundary. And the applicant has coordinated with the Clark Regional Wastewater for a sewer plan. Currently, gravity sewer is available in 124th Avenue, about 1,000 feet south of the site. It's also at the intersection of 119th and 124th. Sewer service to this site would be provided through the construction of two sanitary lift stations, likely to pump water up to those gravity mains. On-site sewer would gravity drain to one of those two lift stations. So there's a plan. We've looked at how we plan this. Sewer, now when you say adequate, there's a highly variable sewer and water consumption depending on the industry. Typically, it's much more variable at heavy industry. We're talking about light industry. So you would apply general factors to the amount of sewer usage per acre. We've done that and feel there is, with appropriate coordination with the provider, there would be sewer capacity that could be provided to the site.
So the Clark Regional Wastewater is the assumed provider for sewer for this site going forward. They do have something that's in the region, and the definition is that capacity sufficient or not. It still needs to be defined.
Yes.
Steve, it looks like you had a number of ways you wanted to contribute to some of these answers that we're fishing for.
Thank you,
Chair. If we're recording that, so our citizens can hear the conversation.
Steve Morrissey, for the record, representing representing the Lyco family and the Abercrombie family. Several things I'd like to be really clear about for today. Let's start with the sewer. We actually, in preparing the application, which took the better part of a year, We actually worked with Clark Regional to design at a conceptual level a sewer system that they would provide for this site. So we are comfortable. We have adequate sewer design for this site. And as part of the application, there's so much in there, and there's so much involved in this, it's easy to forget that. I want to thank staff and Burke and Tim for their hard work on this. I think we're losing the bigger picture here in some areas. This is a statute that was that came out of Clark County. It was drafted by Rich Lowry, the then prosecuting attorney for land use, who probably the best land use lawyer I've ever met. Betty Sue Morris was on the commission at that time, and I, and we worked pretty hard to get it through. We've had it extended three or four times now. This is a proposed amendment to the comprehensive land use plan that is allowed by statute to be handled without a subcommittee. It is coincidental that we happen to be doing an inside growth management, not just the amendment to the comp plan, the annual amendments, but the full meal deal growth management plan update, which is also in the nature of comprehensive plan amendments to what we have. I believe that we're getting a little too far into the weeds on the inventory of land and the alternatives analysis. We submitted an inventory that was done by McKinsey, planners and architects, for the CRADC and the county, for the CRADC to be used by the county for other things, as the in the boundary inventory of industrial lands, and I believe that we're relying on that.
Yes, that's correct.
The outside, I think where we're getting a little too far into the weeds is the outside of the boundary. What the statute says is an inventory of available industrial lands, which presumes inside the boundary, and that is framed in terms of alternatives analysis. What we have outside the boundary is analysis of the availability of an inventory of developable land is provided for in the statute. An analysis of the availability of alternative sites with their urban growth areas and the long-term annexation feasibility of sites outside of the urban growth area. Annexation feasibility. The first thing that means is they have to touch, because you can't annex land that doesn't touch not just the urban growth area, but the, unless you interpret this to say annexation to an urban growth boundary, and I'm not sure if that's the way you're interpreting that or not. But it's, at best, it's got to be adjacent to an urban growth boundary. The annexation is a legal term of art. That means annexation to a city, and you need to touch a city. So perhaps the statute isn't as clear. But it doesn't involve determination of whether this is a better site or not. Because when it comes down to it, you have to say yay or nay on this site, with, as you said, with some perhaps variation, based on whether the application meets the criteria. You could say no, I suppose, because you have a site that could be annexed. I think that'd be a stretch. You've got an application here. Does it meet the criteria? The chances of getting another application are getting slimmer by the month because of the time it takes to prepare one. It was a heck of a lot of work to put this application together. So I think analyzing to the degree we are on some of these alternative sites that are outside of the growth boundary may be going a little further than we intended in the statute.
So
it's open to interpretation.
Yes. I appreciate your objective reading of the statute, but I want to be careful because this is a work session, and I want to be careful that you, as a proponent working for Site 1,
yes,
that we don't go into an advocacy for that in your discussion.
I'm explaining to you what the statute is.
I know, but okay. I want to be careful that we don't cross a legal boundary here, that as we're making a decision, that you as a proponent are offering observations.
Commissioner, I fully understand those rules. I do this for a living. And what I'm trying to explain to you is how we're interpreting the statute, how we're going about the staff analysis of this. I don't want to get to a planning commission hearing and a board hearing and be totally opposed to what the staff has come up with, because we'll have a very tough time with this.
And I understand that, but you do understand my point.
And you haven't heard me talk about the site at all yet, and I won't do that.
You have talked about the narrowing down if we select one. So I'm just saying I just want to be careful.
Thank you. And I don't think I have anything further other than to say I think it's time for Mr. Lagler and I to come in and have a long meeting with staff to go through all of this work that's been done and hopefully have Lisa at least on the phone. We've talked about doing this, and I think I've said I think we'll wait a little bit. I think it's time. He has to continue to make decisions about how this is going as well. That's for sure.
And the reason that I invited you to the table is not to advocate. You have not advocated, but be able to bring some clarity to these questions. And one of the observations that I have here is our role is not to necessarily follow some agenda of whether we want pro-growth or whatever, pro-preservation. It really has to do with answering the question, does this application meet the criteria of the law?
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve and councilors. I'm sure that Tim will finish up the master planning approach to this site. I think we were answering questions relating to sewer, and it is our Steve is correct that they did submit a sewer plan as part of the application. Councilor, this is an area, and it's not new to the councilors, and if it is, I apologize, but this is an area in terms of who serves it that the City of Vancouver and Clark Regional Wastewater have been having a dialogue on who serves the area. But as I know it, this area is within the service boundary of the Clark Regional Wastewater, and that's who has provided us a plan to serve the area. So please continue.
Yes. It is reasonable to expect in the future more and more cooperation in all of those partners in Clark Regional Wastewater to be working together for the entire county.
That's correct.
And that's underway now, and I'm sure that we'll see those partnerships and agreements expanded.
That's correct.
Unprecedented cooperation in the last several years.
Right.
Sure. And for the there are citizens that have been out there at the in the field with citizens and hear a number of concerns for and against this. And if I understand correctly, the decision that we'll finally be making on this is not to approve a permit to be able to build something. This is to say yes or no to a provision to a land bank for a potential application that will then have to follow the whole process of review, and that's a separate process that adds that can only follow if this stage is set.
And hopefully not just one application, but
multiple
applications in the future. That is what it is for, to set up the system in that location whereby that can happen.
And that those future applications will have to satisfy the requirements of concurrency and all of those other infrastructure.
Site plan review.
Right?
Yes.
In other words, the GMA's intention is to ensure that as we grow, that we invest responsibly in the necessary infrastructure so we don't get ourselves in trouble. Yes.
So I do have a question about, when we look at the map on page 25, what you see there is a little sliver of land on the west that looks to me that it's not included, and it's creating an island for that parcel. What do we know about that parcel? Is that
can
create difficulty you know which piece I mean?
Yes, I don't have the ownership in front of me, but these parcels that are represented in the master plan are exactly those that applied for the land bank. But we have done some analysis on which properties might make sense to make it a better shape, serviceable area. And that information was presented at the public workshop on some boards. But that would be one of those properties that would make sense. Should you want to move forward, that might make sense to consider.
Squaring up the boundary.
Squaring it up,
yes.
Right.
So as we I developed this map. As we developed this map, we did not plan over someone's property and did not apply. But you made an observation that certainly there are parcels adjacent or isolated that could provide efficient inclusion, but we did not provide planning over someone's property who did not apply.
I see.
So, yes.
If this application gets approved as proposed, at some time in the future, that landowner or others adjacent are interested to be in to tack on after the fact, is there provision for that in the future?
Well, that's an interesting question, because that statute does sunset at the end of 2016. We would need to think about how that might happen.
Well, at that point, I wouldn't think that it would be considered an industrial land bank application. It would be more of a merging of some sort through an existing plan that was already adopted.
Possibly.
So, at this point, we don't know what that future will be, but at this point, we won't focus on this. But
no, I don't think so.
And Councilor Schuricker pointed out that what appears to be almost an island.
There is, through the public hearing process, if for some reason the councillors find that this property should be included to round up or to provide a better rounding of the site in question, and it may be present opportunity, you have to make that findings and may include it as part of the entire area if you so choose. That could also be considered through your hearing process. I agree with our team that they narrowed the master planning on the areas that was where we know the property owners are making the formal application. But the opportunity exists if you believe that that little square should be included. Beyond that, I would not encourage council to start looking at the piece to the north, if you will, that fronts 100 and or SR 503. One could make that argument. Why not square that off? There's so many areas that you may look at, even to the south, and say, why not bring that area in? But this is limited to the property owners that formally made the applications. But you can see that there are some areas that one can reach a conclusion that it should have been squared off for a variety of reasons. But let's, Tim, wrap up the master planning concept so that you see where we are.
If you go to the map,
what I'm concerned about is at least that property owner understand what's going to be happening around them.
Sure.
And to let them know that they may want to be part of it. But what I don't want is for a landowner to come to us in the future and say, I never knew this was happening or whatever. I know our staff is very good about notifying surrounding.
Yes, we have had one property owner to the south who's requested to be included, and we counseled essentially what to do, and we basically agreed that it was up to Mr. Lagler if Mr. Lagler wanted to amend the application. But if he wanted to, we would require an amended application. And then we said, if we're going to go this route, we need to freeze the content, because at some point we've got to say this is the application so that the work can be done. And I think Mr. Hornstein decided at some point that we just leave well enough alone, and the application was what he presented originally. So we know there's some other interest out there, and there certainly is the option for you to say, well, it makes sense to square this up or add this or take this out. You can so direct, and we can go talk to folks. But we're working on the application that we have.
Sure. From a county standpoint, I don't think we would be deemed responsible if we didn't make an effort to notify that property owner what the potential is for occurring around them. So they know what their options are. And it sounds to me like some communication has been done by various parties. But
yes, we will notify the property owners. I recall that at one point the councilor didn't want to be adding property owners to the application, because you add one, you open the door for the next, and then before you know it, we will have more than 800 or 1,000 acres that we are dealing with. So there was that decision made up front to focus on the application. But I believe that when we go to a hearing, we will notify, and through the workshops and open houses that we're having, we're letting folks know so that they're not surprised in terms of what is happening around them.
I do recall we did that.
Yes.
In the years past.
Yes.
This just didn't happen. It's been years in the making. And we went to talk about all the residential areas that would have been affected.
Yes.
So let me. Okay.
Where are we at there? Just to clarify, okay, one question here. So if in this process, I understand you would be able to have a concise, complete application and don't keep changing the targets, so that we're moving ahead there. As this does move through this process, if that particular landowner comes in and says, we don't want to be an island, we want to be included, do we have the discretion to include them before this process is complete? Because I understand that there's already a challenging time frame in front of us in order to get this done, and it becomes more challenging if you add more variations.
Well, there's a challenging time frame. That's one issue. Another issue is that there has been an application, and there was a payment made for the application. I don't believe that this other landowner was part of that, whoever that might be. A third issue is that there's been a lot of work done to plan these properties, to investigate these properties and to plan. So having somebody come in at the 11th hour and saying, oh, me too, the whole purpose of this is to the kind of the product that we end up with is the plan that Tim is discussing and has been working on. So adding somebody at the very 11th hour would be, I think, quite difficult.
Okay.
Well, and I'm not suggesting, what I'm suggesting is, because I don't know what the background is on that property owner that will become an island,
mm-hmm.
That this not be a surprise to them. That's my point.
Yes.
Yes.
This plan, I think, helps, highlight an issue to that conversation. Right now, it's just zoning. So nothing's happening yet. It's
yes.
Just zoning. So under an application process, there's actual development someday, perhaps. Now, I've been doing this a long time. There are always out parcels, and there is never a lack of motivation for the moving developer to talk to the out parcels. Almost every time, large developers, it's as frustrating for them as it is for the out parcel. There's usually a dialogue. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But it would be hard to believe out parcels surrounded wouldn't have some dialogue, because there's so much interest in both parties to do that. But at this point, it is just zoning. I'd be happy to kind of explain the purpose of this concept, which has been a source of conversation for a while.
And
go ahead.
I'm in no way suggesting we should hold it up.
Some that goes a long way.
Okay.
At this
So this map, I guess, as pointed out earlier, we're not approving development pattern. This is not a master plan you would approve. This is a hypothetical concept of one way it could occur. And the point of doing this is to suggest, is the land appropriate? Could it be master planned? Probably the only thing I can say with certainty is whoever does develop this someday, should it become an industrial zone, probably wouldn't choose the plan we've done because there'll be better information at the time. There's a concept plan, and when you have actual development, you adjust the plan to actual development. This is one way in which we believe to retain sort of larger parcel sizes, this could develop, that it is possible. There's very high-level planning. We've not done detailed stormwater analysis. We've not done detailed delineations. This is a concept to demonstrate at this sort of 30,000-foot level how this might happen. We believe there is sufficient geometry, partial configuration, lack of constraints to support some efficient master plan for a light industrial. This is not arbitrary. The geometry is informed through some master planning and some parcelization studies we've done, which are not included, which we could talk about someday in the future. But this is in there is some science behind this layout. Specifically, we wanted to retain just a singular intersection on Highway 503.
Oh, right.
And there's a lot of work behind this, but this is just a concept, and I would encourage us not to get into the details because it goes into the weeds and it's all hypothetical. So if there's questions, I'm happy to answer them.
That was very clear.
I think the takeaway from this, which was, it's a little hard to read up there, but this is, we've got 600 acres, but which is the total in the box on the left-hand side. But if you look at wetlands and buffers and inside buffers, which are being proposed, I think we looked at 100 feet. We end up with about 308 developable acres out of this site. And so the parts that you see there that are in green and blue are probably not going to be available for development and could be either open space or used for agriculture. Lots of options here, and I think we talked about this a lot, which is what our approach was to the master plan. And I think we're spot on in saying you're not going to have something that's a site. We're not adopting a site plan. We're adopting a concept. And will it actually look like this in 5, 10, 15, 20 years when there's actually built out? Probably not. But Tim is absolutely right in that we need to show where the access will take place to both sides, and to get some idea of with the developable acres that are there, how we might divide them up, and maintaining cross circulation, which is a site plan requirement, having maximum flexibility. So if one parcel is developed, we don't preclude options on the parcels next to it. All those are the kinds of things that go into this. So rather than seeing a master plan, which means the entire 600 acres will be laid out with all the pipes in the ground and all that. This is what we think is more, what we think more is what is called for in terms of the concept.
And I would offer that this is very conservative. Frankly, when you do a concept plan, you hope you're doing it in a way such that over time, when you conduct further study, the yield goes up, not down. So you're making conservative assumptions about buffers, conservative assumptions about how big the wetlands are, conservative assumptions about how much stormwater would take. Generally, to shrink the blue and the green areas over time, you spend a little more money to shrink those by mitigation, by further study. This is intended to be a conceptual plan and a conceptual yield. And at this level, probably a little more detail probably than we might otherwise do for a zoning exercise, but we wanted to make sure we do our homework and we understand how this could efficiently develop. So that's, unless there's further questions, we can go to the next slide.
Okay, we're running a little over, and I apologize for that. All good questions, but we want to make sure that we get your questions answered. You're going to be hearing more about this as we move forward. This is kind of the proposed timeline. We're working on the master plan process. You've seen a draft of the master plan concept that Tim just talked about. The development regulations need to be put in. The environmental review will be kind of the last thing I think is done, as we've talked about. And you can see there before the end of the year, about the local adoption process. So there isn't an absolute timeline that we're on. This will depend on what the board wants to do, when we need to get you scheduled for the comprehensive plan update and those sorts of things. But this is kind of a general, what we're hoping for is to get to the adoption process before the end of the year. So next slide. This is kind of the public involvement we've done. We've got a standing webpage on called the Rural Industrial Land Bank. It's on the community planning webpage, which is, you get to from the Clark County webpage. We've talked to the neighborhood associations. I was at Metal Glade last month. We've talked to NAC. We've done news releases coordinated with Mary's office. This is one of the number of work sessions that we'll have. We've had two open houses. Next slide. So we're planning a third open house, I think, with some of the more environmental information on sites. We're looking. I said July. It might be. Certainly won't be any earlier than that. August. The process. There's a draft of the de-designation analysis that's been on the web for some time, because we have to take the. Ultimately, the land has to be designated from ag so we can make an industrial. This analysis includes some work on the all of the sites, not just the docket site, the application site. Sites analysis, there's a draft of that on the web. The draft master plan concept that Tim just spoke to, that's on the web. It's the drafting of the development regulations and the environmental review are kind of our two remaining steps. And we're going to be talking about sort of our path forward this afternoon. So next slide. And hit the end. Thank you. thank you. Yes, Councillor.
The July open house, do we have a date and a location?
We do not have a date. We think we'll be ready for another one by then. We've had the last two at the Casey Center, which isn't the greatest room for a spot, but it's proximal to where people who are living next to this can get to.
Yeah.
That's, and we will probably have the third one there. When we have the third one, it'll be there.
And if you could make sure the counselors get a notification on that.
Certainly.
That would be helpful.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions?
Yes. Is there a provision for citizens who want to submit their comments for the public record? Can we do that?
Is there a web page or something you can go to? Yes.
Can we do that for others?
Yes.
Existing yet for this?
I believe there is.
Okay. Can we communicate that to them? Do you know how do they submit? Okay. So if we go to that, can we go to that page and see what we see?
Should bring it up.
I like to. So we can see what can we. Where can they submit comments?
Anything on there?
Oh, they can email to Jen. Yep. To you.
I thought we had the. We don't have a separate, like comp.plan@clark.wa. There isn't a separate. But I think. Yeah, this just says contact us on the phone during business hours or by email anytime.
Okay.
That's all we've got on the right hand side over there.
I've been to the last. Casey Center open houses on this, mm-hmm. And I see that a number of citizens submit, ask questions, provide comments. Are they being collected and stored somewhere?
We haven't been recording the meetings so far. That's one of the reasons we invite the consultants down so they can hear what people's concerns are.
They submitted comment sheets.
Yes.
And what becomes of those comment sheets?
They're in the record. They're in the record for this project.
Can we put those records online so that people can see what their neighbors are saying about this?
We can. We didn't tell people that we were going to do that.
Just from a matter of us making sure that we welcome transparency, open process, participation.
Do you have the staff for that, Oliver?
Oh, we got five or six or seven sheets from the last one. Okay. Wouldn't be hard to scan them.
The
other thing we do is we have an email list, and so anytime this website is updated, we send out what we call an email, just an email blast, so that people know that something has happened or is happening.
All three counselors are included in that list.
Should be.
Right. Okay.
I'll check and see.
All right. During this process, also it's important that we as elected officials hear from the citizens. So I encourage them to, if they have comments or concerns or questions, we're ultimately charged with the responsibility of making the decisions regarding this application. So I certainly welcome that. Anybody who wants me to voice their concerns or have questions, contact their representative, that's us.
We will make those adjustments to the current website, and as Ms. Krupp, as you have approved changing my half FTE to a full FTE, so we are in the process of making that recruitment. That's why I said this is not going to be a one-time deal. So if I get a full-time position, we will create some capacity to be doing this type of work, because it is really all our projects. That's what I was, if I can say, lobbying when I was making that request. All our processes and projects requires extensive public involvement, keeping our records and documenting that and indexing it, particularly those projects that relate to the GMA. In case we are challenged, we have to show our record, and we have to keep, we have to index everything that comes in. And as you said, we have to make, there's a need for continuous public involvement, and our goal is to make sure that the public participates through the workshop, through this type of setting and planning commission, and document that. As God indicated, we have folks that we've asked to sign in that have interest in this project, so that anytime we're having something in the future, we will notify them. We are working with Mary Kell's staff to do press releases and other things that we have to do to continue that continuous, to maintain that continuous public involvement. So we will make the changes to the website and provide opportunity for folks to comment on this and document that.
In our last budget update, you asked for and we approved the extra help that you need, the office needs, in order to make sure that the public comments are properly provided for and published out there.
Right.
So you're looking for some kind of consensus from us today, be able to, or just send you this information, but you don't need anything from us today.
No, unless there's some direction you want to provide. The idea was to give you a progress report and a status report, and have you be able to ask questions of the folks that are actually doing the work on your behalf, on the citizens' behalf, and give you a progress report and kind of say what our next steps are. So.
Great. Well, I think it was a very informative process, a discovery process that helped me to fill in a lot of blanks here. So. You apologize for going long. It's, you're not guilty of that. We are.
Not a problem, Councilor.
I consider that to be a good thing, because yes, we're interested. We need to be able to pursue and ask those questions in order to do our due diligence.
And if you have more, you know where to find us. So this
yes.
this is an exciting project. Just because it's new, it's not been done very many times elsewhere. It's been a fun one to work on. But it does have, there are lots of moving parts and pieces. We're talking about how it fits in with, you've asked a question, how it fits in with the comp plan. But we're doing our best to work with the application, and Steve's been very helpful in terms of getting us information when we've needed it. And Lisa's put together a great team, and we're making good progress.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.